Paul and Mary and everyone who has been a part of making this morning so special. Every musician, thank you. And Dave, for that children's lesson. We may need a round two for every adult who wants to be able to run through. Every teenager, every young adult. Oh, may each person here know we are loved, and it is by grace. Well, beyond Mother's Day and Father's Day, Easter, for some of us, is the worst day. We are like the old Bible story of Israel, hanging our harps, captive people in a foreign land. We were forced to sing something merry. Yes, this is an unexpected place for an Easter sermon to begin, but it is where the resurrection and all resurrections begin, with death, with loss, and with confusion. Originally, Preparation Day used to be about preparing for Sabbath and for festivals. And now Mary and the women are preparing spices and perfumes for Jesus' dead body. Grief is real. This person who loved them, who listened to them, who honored them even though they are women, he's dead. And they are unprepared. As soon as they can, they venture out into the almost dark and confusion. They pull on shoes, but they can't go through the motions because they've never done this before. It's time. Covering their heads and with spices in hand, their feet begin to move. Their energy is sapped. Sorrow turns to fear. The stone is moved. Two men in clothes that gleam like lightning pierce the dark. Anger. What now? We are at the right place. We saw his body placed in this tomb. What do you mean he isn't here? Remember what he told you. Delivered to sinners, crucified, and on the third day, raised. Well, then that means seconds tick by as the first people entrusted with this message absorb and comprehend this good news that still baffles. Jesus is alive. They run to tell the 11 and all the others, but the fog of grief, despair, and confusion obstructs the women's excitement into nonsense. Except Peter, who after the rooster crowed, had slunk back in to rejoin the group. And he is now running for the tomb. He has to see the grave clothes for himself. What will he say if he sees Jesus? And what would Jesus say to him? The women, Peter, and we know the entanglements of grief. How sorrow for what might have been can undo us. How nothing makes sense anymore, especially God. So it's noteworthy for us today that on that preparation day, the women prepared their spices, expecting Jesus to stay dead. They thought his death was final. Instead, the finish line was transformed. Jesus, meanwhile, is having another kind of preparation day, conquering sin, defeating evil, killing death, that all who choose him might have new life, even the ones who doubted, which was everybody, even the ones who betrayed him, which was everybody. See, in our world, the game is at the end to get the biggest portion of pie. Winners are the ones who push people around and who make money in a stock market that puts holes in other people's wallets. In our world, the end game is to put people in their place, to give people what they deserve, and count up the score to a game that doesn't last. But Zion, I heard a man tell me last week about a church being a lighthouse, a city on a hill, where the end of the game is not death, but life. I know of a boy there named Ezra who's learning that God is like a mother hen longing to gather her chicks under her wings. Ezra made a book called God and Me. In the book is a picture of God that I requested Aaron put into our bulletins today. Ezra says the little circles are all the people and God is giving them a hug. I know of a fifth grader there who, when his teacher went to Kansas, she asked him to teach the Sunday school class. And God prepared something for him to say and equipped him to say it. I know of other children on this team who God prepared with compassion and insight and integrity so that when the church had a drama where an actor was nailed to the cross and a child saw the bandage afterwards, he began grasping at a deep level the suffering of God for us. God's finish line is a celebration of God's love and power and grace. So let's have our own day of preparation. I invite each of us to select a very bad day in our lives. You can go as deep or as light with this as you want. This is just for us to ponder for ourselves. Let God bring the day to mind. A terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Sometimes we argue, where was God when tragedy struck? I'd like us to notice where God was for the women and the disciples, because this has got to be one of the worst days of their lives. We know from Psalm 34 that we talked about a few weeks ago that God is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. So we know somehow God is very close to Jesus' followers in these hours, just like God is especially close to us on our worst days. And more than that, what was Jesus doing while they were suffering? Just because they didn't see him or have some big dramatic encounter of his presence doesn't mean he wasn't doing something. When Jesus' followers were grappling with sorrow, God wasn't only present with them and weeping with them. Jesus was defeating evil. Jesus began a new creation where the weak are strong. Think about what that means for what Jesus was doing on our worst days. So in every place where we, like the disciples, have forgotten what Jesus told us, where we, like Peter, have defiantly contradicted Jesus, where the mock and the distress of this life have capsized us into thinking, I can't, or I won't, or God can't, or God won't, or that Jesus is dead, God's grace is always greater. The darkness is where resurrection starts. Let's think about this in another way. Jesus hasn't just taught his disciples how to live. Jesus taught his disciples how to die. There's a story from Fred Craddock about a woman who had difficulty breathing. And one day she heard a knock on the door. And there on the other side of the threshold was this ghoulish, yellowish figure And terrified, she slammed the door shut. "Go away! You are not welcome here." She began breathing treatments. It was intense. Her breathing improved. "How you doing?" people would ask. "I'm fine, feeling good, back in the game." And so it went, until another day. There it was again. This hideous creature trying to come in, and she pushed against the door, but this time she needed help. And so her friends and her family joined her. They got the door shut and locked. And for a while longer, things were okay. But then the disease came back, more ferocious than ever. And there she was in the hospital bed, exhausted, when there came another knock at the door. The room was filled with loved ones. They all knew who it was, and they stood against the door. "No," she said. "Open the door." "No, we can't," they cried. "Please." They backed away, and the door swung open. And there on the other side stood the glowing figure of Jesus. That's Easter, right there with the burial spices in hand, and our minds spinning 2,000 years later, trying to make sense of it. The Apostle Paul wrote to the people of Ephesus about hope. He said, "I keep asking that God would give you a spirit of wisdom and of revelation so that you may know God better. I pray that the eyes of your heart would be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which God has called you and the riches of God's glorious inheritance in God's holy people and God's incomparably great power for those who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength God exerted when God raised Christ from the dead and seated him at God's right hand." I remember sitting in a Bowl of Good restaurant in Harrisonburg shortly after those verses landed for me deeply. And I was marveling at this idea that this power God used to raise Jesus from the dead is the same power given to us. That's grace. This world thinks that a team is limited by the weakest player, and God disagrees. We think our limits limit God, and God transforms them so that in our sorrow and fear and anger, on our worst days, in the whole heap of sin and pride and unbelief, Jesus is here with us, working on our behalf and loving us sacrificially. Let's keep doing likewise while leaning more on the power that God has entrusted to us. Let's give thanks to God for God's generous, sacrificing grace. I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his suffering, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow to attain to the resurrection from the dead. Amen.